And welcome back. This is episode 17 of The Daily Buddhism, and I'm your host, Brian Schell. Before we get started recapping this week's material, I've got a couple of quick announcements. A few weeks back, I announced that I had audio recordings of the entire Tao Te Ching available for purchase on the taoofthedai.com website. And starting today, I have something similar on the dailybuddhism.com website. Now we have a 2-CD set of the Dhammapada available on the dailybuddhism.com website. Once again, recorded by yours truly. And it's available directly from the site, and there's a link over on the left-hand side of the screen under the heading Pages. I'll also include a link in the show notes. Starting this week, we'll be taking a look at the Dhammapada, which is, in my opinion, the single most important ancient text in Buddhism. We'll talk a little more about the Dhammapada later in this episode. And now it's time for me to make another call for donations. Call it a pledge drive if you prefer. Although I have gotten a few donations, I can't say that I'm overwhelmed. I absolutely want to thank those people who have sent in donations. I'm still trying to pay off the microphone I bought way back around episode 7, and I had hoped to get a voicemail number like some other podcasts have. But I don't see that happening without additional support. Sooner or later, I'm also going to need to pay for web hosting for another year. The link to donate is there on the website. It's easy to find. I always enjoy your emails and letters of encouragement, but you know, come on guys, out of literally thousands of listeners, this begging shouldn't be needed every week. I've got a specific target goal that I need to reach, and then I can stop pestering, begging, every week. Once I meet that goal, won't hear from me for a good long time on that. Okay, enough of that. Now, on with the show. We started out on Monday with a letter from a reader asking, "What are Buddhist weddings like?" This person wrote and said, "I've been raised in a Christian home, so I've been taught the traditional wedding, white dress, reception, exchanging of vows, etc. What are Buddhist weddings like?" And my response is that there is no special Buddhist wedding ceremony from ancient times. Usually it depends on the country and culture that the couple is from. Very generally speaking, usually only family or very close friends are invited, small weddings, and the ceremonies are predictably very simple. There are usually vows of some sort, and the ceremony is presided over by a priest. Beyond the very basic and sketchy outline, it's all different depending on the denomination of Buddhism and the nationality of people and the families involved. And I have posted a few wedding photos from various groups on the website worth taking a look at to see how people are dressed. And then the next day we had another letter from a different reader. This one wrote, "I have been a Buddhist for the past 3 years or so, after a mentor introduced me to meditation, and I started getting more insight on my life. Since then, my life has improved about 400% in ways that I cannot explain, and making it my practice has been a great journey. I have every intention in continuing my practice for the rest of my life, and will do so. I've come from a family background that is primarily Catholic. Since I am young and in college, I've only discussed my decision to be a Buddhist with people who fully support and trust my decisions, mainly my mother and good friends. The rest of my family, however, isn't accepting to anything that isn't based on Christianity, and I know that the day will come when I will have to admit that I don't associate myself with Christianity the way they do. I wanted to know if you had any advice on how to mentally deal with this situation. I know I will be fine, and I need to stick to what I'm passionate about, but I know I will get some resistance from certain members of my family. How do I deal with this when the time comes? I know with confidence and meditation I'll be fine, but I'm simply looking for some words of wisdom." And my response is that I think what you describe is a very common situation here in the West, especially in the USA. Although the government is required to be religiously tolerant, that doesn't mean our families have to be. Sometimes families, in their eagerness to help us, cause no end to additional suffering, especially when there is a disagreement over something so personal and individually important as our beliefs. Now, I have the same problem. My closest family knows about my Buddhism, but with my aunts, uncles, cousins, and other extended family, it's never really come up, although I expect that it will eventually. In my case, however, none of my family is really what I would call overly zealous about religion. They probably wouldn't understand my choice, but they wouldn't go to any great effort to try and change my mind either. But not everyone is so lucky. Many religions, not just Christians, go about things with the "we're right and everything else is wrong" approach to other faiths. Some people will go to any lengths to change your thinking, and that can only lead to conflict. They believe they're helping you, you know where you want to be. It's a tough situation. Now, I would suggest the best approach is to make sure your family sees you acting in the finest traditions of Buddhism, without necessarily advertising the fact that you're a Buddhist. They'll see and experience you as a good person, doing good in the world, alleviating suffering where and when you can. By doing this, by acting in the best Buddhist way, you'll also be an exemplar of the best Christian values. And when your shocking secret eventually comes to light, maybe, just maybe, they'll be willing to talk rather than judge you out of hand. I'm sure plenty of readers and listeners have experienced this for themselves. I would love to hear and share your stories about the reactions of your family or friends to your Buddhism. And then next up, on Wednesday, I did a book review on The Accidental Buddhist by Dinty W. Moore. And there's a link to order this on the website, www.dailybuddhism.com/accidentalbuddhism. It'll be in the show notes. And in my opinion, this is a fun book, and I've read it a couple of times. It explores the state of Buddhism in America today, following the author as he travels around America visiting and talking to various Buddhist groups. He starts out by visiting a Zen monastery. He meets with a Catholic priest who also teaches Buddhism. He talks to Buddhist magazine publishers, Tibetan freedom advocates, zafu makers, and an interview with the Dalai Lama himself. Now, what are the problems and joys of being a Buddhist in America? And what will the neighbors think? Buddhism evolved in the East, and the East evolved around Buddhism. But that's not the case in America, so it's not a perfect fit, and there are many dilemmas and problems that the author humorously notes. Although the book is not really a "What is Buddhism?" book, you'll glean a lot of insight into all things Buddhistic in this one. I would definitely call it appropriate for any beginning-level Buddhist, and anyone who's been reading the Daily Buddhism for any length of time should have no problem at all with any of the terminology or ideas in this book. The book is filled with humor. He's a very funny writer. The author has some of the best and funniest quotes about monkey mind that I've ever come across. But the book also has a serious undertone to it. For example, why would the Dalai Lama suggest that maybe Americans shouldn't become Buddhists? How can monks in America support themselves in a culture that doesn't really support monks? And will that monkey ever shut up? Again, this is not a how-to book, but I strongly recommend it for a fun read. It's The Accidental Buddhist by Dinty W. Moore. And next up was this week's story time with the koan for the week, No Loving Kindness. There was an old woman in China who had supported a monk for over 20 years. She had built a little hut for him and fed him while he was meditating. Finally, she wondered just what progress he had made in all this time. To find out, she obtained the help of a girl rich in desire. "Go and embrace him," she told her, and then asked him suddenly, "What now?" The girl called upon the monk, and without much ado, caressed him, asking him what he was going to do about it. "An old tree grows on a cold rock in winter," replied the monk somewhat poetically. "Nowhere is there any warmth." The girl returned and related what she had said. "To think that I fed that fellow for 20 years, exclaimed the old woman in anger. "He showed no consideration for your needs, no disposition to explain your condition. He need not have responded to passion, but at least he should have evidenced some compassion. Then she at once went to the hut of the monk and burned it down. This one seems to be one of the more difficult ones to really follow through. There are some good comments on the website for this one. Most people are trying to read something sexual into it because the girl was trying to seduce the old man, but others felt that maybe it was the old lady who lost her compassion. May want to take a look at the comments on that and put your comment alongside the others. And then on Friday, we took a look at the Dhammapada for the first time. As I said at the beginning of this podcast, of all the ancient Buddhist texts, the Dhammapada is easily my favorite. The name translates roughly to the Path of the Dharma. The 26 chapters of the book are supposedly directly from the mouth of Buddha. They encompass a wide variety of topics compiled into a single book by some ancient follower of Buddha. Now, I think that this is the best and most concise statement of everything it means to be a Buddhist. Everything of importance is in there somewhere. I'd like to cover the whole thing here non-stop, but 26 chapters would tie us up for a solid month. Instead, I'll be doing one chapter a week for a very long time to read and to discuss. That is going to take a long time. If you just can't wait for the whole thing, like I said earlier, we now have the entire Dhammapada available on CD at the website. Now here's chapter 1 to get us started. All the verses are numbered for reference, at least in the printed version. I'm not going to read the numbers here. Chapter 1, The Twin Verses. All that we are is the result of what we have thought. It is founded on our thoughts. It is made up of our thoughts. If a man speaks or acts with an evil thought, pain follows him, as the wheel follows the foot of the ox that draws the carriage. All that we are is the result of what we have thought. It is founded on our thoughts. It is made up of our thoughts. If a man speaks or acts with a pure thought, happiness follows him, like a shadow that never leaves him. He abused me. He beat me. He defeated me. He robbed me. In those who harbor such thoughts, hatred will never cease. He abused me. He beat me. He defeated me. He robbed me. In those who do not harbor such thoughts, hatred will cease. For hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. This is an old rule. The world does not know that we must all come to an end here, but those who know it, their quarrels cease at once. He who lives looking for pleasure only, his senses uncontrolled, immoderate in his food, idle and weak, Mara the tempter will certainly overthrow him, as the wind throws down a weak tree. He who lives without looking for pleasures, his senses well controlled, moderate in his food, faithful and strong, him, Mara, will certainly not overthrow, any more than the wind throws down a rocky mountain. He who wishes to put on the yellow dress, without having cleansed himself from sin, who disregards temperance and truth, is unworthy of the yellow dress. But he who has cleaned himself from sin, is well grounded in all virtues, and regards also temperance and truth, he is indeed worthy of the yellow dress. They who imagine truth in untruth and see untruth in truth never arrive at truth, but follow vain desires. They who know truth in truth and untruth in untruth arrive at truth and follow true desires. As rain breaks through an ill-thatched house, passion will break through an unreflecting mind. As rain does not break through a well-thatched house, passion will not break through a well-reflecting mind. The evildoer mourns in this world, and he mourns in the next. He mourns in both. He mourns and suffers when he sees the evil of his own work. The virtuous man delights in this world, and he delights in the next. He delights in both. He delights and rejoices when he sees the purity of his own work. The evildoer suffers in this world, and he suffers in the next. He suffers in both. He suffers when he thinks of the evil he has done, suffers more when going on the evil path. The virtuous man is happy in this world, and he is happy in the next. He is happy in both. He is happy when he thinks of the good he has done. He is still more happy when going on the good path. The thoughtless man, even if he can recite a large portion of the law, but is not a doer of it, has no share in the priesthood, but is like a cowherd counting the cows of others. The follower of the law, even if he can recite only a small portion of the law, but having forsaken passion and hatred and foolishness, possesses true knowledge and serenity of mind. He, caring for nothing in this world or that to come, has indeed a share in the priesthood. And that's it for episode 17. Sign up for the mailing list at the website. Stop in and view past issues and episodes of everything at the website, www.dailybuddhism.com. Make a donation if you'd like. Read and comment on any of the articles posted there. And until next week, see you next time.